Hey, it's Bill Simmons. I just wanted to make sure you're listening to podcasts on Spotify. Here's how you do it. First, search for your favorite podcast on Spotify's app. They have a library of over 750,000 pods at this point. So let's say you're searching for The Rewatchables or The Dave Chang Show or The Ringer NBA Show. Once you find them, click on the follow button. That's how you subscribe. Then click on those letters near the top of the app that say podcasts. All the pods you're following will pop up separated by episodes, downloads, and shows. Wait, it gets better. On Spotify, you can adjust the speed of the pods to 7 different speeds. 0.5 times is the slowest. I actually sound drunk at 0.5. You can do 0.8 times, 1.2 times, which is my favorite. Everyone sounds like they just had a good cup of coffee. And then there's 1.5 times, 2 times, and if you're completely insane, 3 times. Anyway, Spotify's app connects directly to many of the best automobiles in the world. It even has a CarPlay feature that's pretty cool. Best of all, it's free. Download Spotify on any device, and you're good to go. Should you be embarrassed that you're not listening to podcasts on Spotify? Well, I don't want to app shame you, but the answer, unfortunately, is yes. Make the move. Listen to podcasts on Spotify.
Hi there.
Hello.
Janet, who's that man?
This is my new rebound boyfriend, Derek. I made him.
Hi, I'm Derek. You must be Mike. Ah. Okay, that makes more sense. You must be Michael. Janet's made a lot of talk into my ear holes about you.
Did she tell you that Binge Mode contains adult content and spoilers?
I know, but I did, though.
And now, Binge Mode.
Drink up, because you gotta go.
What?
You dumped.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about me dumping you. Get out of here.
I can't turn this away.
What are you... Listen, I know that I have a magnetism that is undeniable and that you only want more now that you've gotten a taste. I am sex crack. I get it. But you gotta hit the pavement.
I can't get off the crack.
Hello! Yeah! And welcome back. Binge Mode Weekly,
yes.
Proudly a part of the Ringer Podcast Network.
That's right.
I'm Mallory Rubin, editor-in-chief of TheRinger.com.
It's a great website. And a great podcast network.
It's true. Joining me today, now that he's finished hiding in Nicolaj's closet and That's telling right. Boyle that he doesn't know what he's so scared about.
What is it?
What? Why are you so scared? It's Ringer Senior Creative, your maester, Jason Concepcion.
Mal, as usual, I wanted to shower and anoint my body in essential oils before we saw Rosa or recorded this podcast. Because Binge Mode is back!
The yes.
Special quarantine run of Binge Mode Weekly, where, as we social distance, amid the COVID-19 pandemic, we'll be coming to you once a week to cover a series of rotating topics, revisiting some past favorites, and diving into some new stories as well, while also getting to work on the next full Binge Mode project. More info on that front coming soon. Stay tuned. Please subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or just wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us. Give us the 5-star ratings, or we will send Jimmy the Butcher Figgis after you. Also, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, both of those at Binge_mode, a.k.a. the underscore, and join our Facebook group, which is just for Binge Mode fans and which is an excellent place to comfort each other as you quarantine. We hope that you're all staying safe, staying healthy. Also, if you're looking to spice up your work from home wardrobe, please head to theringer.com/shop to check out our Binge Mode merch.
Last time on Binge Mode Weekly, we dove into the first part of our chat with our good friend, Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah!
And today we're continuing to dive deep.
Deep
into our interview. Some quarantine comic book recommendations, a video game check-in, some Mantzoukas character canon talk, and much, much more. As always, spoiler warning, we will be going deep on details from the various pop culture properties that we're going to cover. So
deep!
Proceed with caution.
And one small note, we had some technical hiccups here, so you'll hear the audio quality change on my track briefly. Nothing to worry about, folks. We're getting all those wrinkles ironed out.
Very brief. Small wrinkles. Tiny wrinkles. So whip out the cotton candy brandy and the lentil soup.
Oh, I was whipping something else out.
Well, that is what Jay from Big Mouth would do with the lentil soup, so that's apt.
I hear wit, and I just immediately start doing something else.
Because it's time for part two of our conversation with Jason Mantzoukas. Let's talk about Saga.
Let's talk about Saga, because you guys are doing Saga.
Yeah.
We want you to pitch people on why they should care about Saga.
Help us prime the listeners.
Well, so to be clear, Jason, you've read it?
Yeah, I have read it.
Okay, so you're caught up. And Mal, never. Or you, no, you've started it? You're in the middle somewhere?
I'm in the middle, yeah. Okay. So I got the three books. So the 54 issues have been put into three books. So I'm on book two of the three books.
Okay, so Saga. I mean, how do you... to take as a jumping off point, the fact that I feel like you guys in particular, knowing you, the little I know you personally, but how well I know you as the people that are digesting these large structure fantasy stories, right? These immersive worlds to get into, right? Saga is perfect because it's another one of those worlds. It is Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. It is a book that they've been doing for Image for years now, and it is this sprawling space epic that begins as a kind of Romeo and Juliet story between these two characters who are both part of, it's a planet, is at war with its moon. Yeah. And so they fall in love, and the story begins as they fall in love and they have a baby,
Hazel,
which is a hybrid of their two species, which they thought was previously perhaps not even possible. And what ensues is an intergalactic chase slash, the scope of it becomes about parenting. It becomes about what it means to be in a long-term relationship. It becomes about giant alien penises. And it becomes, there is a whole component of it that is just the bounty hunters. They're not called bounty hunters in this world.
Freelancers.
They're called freelancers, exactly. Though the freelancers who are hired to chase down Marco and Alana and their child and either kill them or whatever, the bad guys all have computer screens as heads.
This robot.
The visual, Fiona Staples' visuals are like unbelievable. Next level.
Incredible.
No one working draws better outfits than Fiona Staples.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. That's really, that's such a funny way to put it. The same way that I think Sean Murphy draws the best cars in comics. It's beautifully done. It's hilarious. There's so many good jokes in it. And it goes through time. Like you watch Hazel, the daughter who's born, you watch her getting older and discovering the war that she is within inside of. And all of these, as they go, much like in Thrones or in Harry Potter, they assemble makeshift families and then oftentimes lose them due to being found out and this, that, and the other. Brian K. Vaughan, who's the writer of the book, also wrote Why the Last Man, which if you're looking for a long series to read during quarantine, perhaps it's a little too on the nose. But Why the Last Man is a book that Brian K. Vaughan wrote about a plague that kills every man in the world except for one and leaves everybody else alive. Great. There it is. Mal is holding up the complete Why the Last Man series. That's a great book as well. A lot of Brian K. Vaughan's books are dealing, Paper Girls is another one that I would promote as well, that just wrapped up and is available in trades and in hardcovers. Family, the way that you guys talk about family is the family that you make, you know? And that's what Saga is at its core, is Marco and Alana like continuing to realign their family unit as they lose people, including at times themselves dropping in and out. You know, it's pretty fucking fantastic. I don't know if I've done a good job selling you on it, but it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Incredible. And so it's on hiatus right now, right? Halfway through the
ultimate. They always take a break.
108 planned issues and we're through 54. So it's a good moment in time to catch up because like there's enough there for you to really dive into, really feel like you're in this fully realized rich story and rich universe. But then you're going to get to share all of it. If you read it now, share the rest of the journey with everybody in real time. Tap back into that spirit of community that we're all missing after Thrones. So we're excited to talk about that more.
And he's an author that, like I said, like I would definitely say, especially because you guys are doing Saga, everybody read Saga. And if you enjoy it, jump on those other books that he's written, whether it's
yes.
Why the Last Man or Paper Girls, which Cliff Chang drew and is unbelievable. It's a time travel story starring five, like 13-year-old paper girls who are delivering the morning paper. And they suddenly start jumping throughout time because of a temporal time displacement event that starts to happen. And they find themselves at the center of, again, a war that is going on. But instead of being waged through the galaxy, this war is being waged through time.
Newspapers are not dead. See, kids?
Yes.
What issue do they discover TikTok in? How about Quibi?
I'm like, Quibi.
Can I just promote a bunch of other comic books that I think people should
read?
Yes,
please. Yes, go for it.
Because I think there's two things for people who are, we're now quarantined, we have time to read. There's two things. There's books that you can get now that are ongoing, like Saga. Saga is still active, even though it's on a hiatus. The story is not done. The way that like Why the Last Man, Paper Girls, those stories are complete. There's a bunch of other things that I feel like fall into that category. Like Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips have been doing books for years that are unbelievable, many of which are collected in single big hardcover or trade paperbacks as well. There's one called Velvet that is an amazing story that is essentially, what if Miss Moneypenny in James Bond, right? What if the woman who is the secretary to the head of the Secret Service or whatever, she's like in her 50s or whatever, 60s and 50s in the book. What if she secretly has to go and become the biggest badass because that's what she was? And
amazing.
It's an amazing, just straight up espionage story that is fantastic.
Ooh.
Ed Brubaker, again, has a whole series called Criminal that are just pulpy crime stories, oftentimes featuring similar. There's a series of them that are different generations of the same family. So you're seeing how the sins of the father create a son who then later, 20 years later, becomes a. So like you're also watching one
Love
book
it.
Takes place in the crime in the 70s, then crime in the 90s. They're amazing books. I'm doing a comic book Zoom book club with some friends. We just did all of Jonathan Hickman's lead up to the current X-Men.
I love that stuff.
The Powers of X and House of X, which are all collected in one book. And that's terrific.
Nice.
Jason Aaron's Conan book right now is unbelievable. So fun, beautiful, like amazing. There's a trade paperback. The whole thing is done called Assassin Nation. Kyle Starks and Erica Henderson book that is a guy brings together all the greatest hitmen and says, someone's trying to kill me. You're the greatest hitmen out there. Protect me.
Oh,
and
wow.
Every issue is just a murder set piece. Like, I can't wait till it gets turned into something. And I'm like, all I want is to be one of the characters in it. And the character that I would most like to portray is named Fuck Tarkington.
Fuck Tarkington.
Oh my God. Incredible.
The book is fantastic.
You're not going to bring the TikTok man in?
Oh, I'll put the TikTok man in anything.
He'd be right at home, it sounds like.
If you want a big series, just because I mentioned Jason Aaron's Conan book is amazing. Conan the Barbarian book is amazing right now. Wouldn't it be amazing if Jason Aaron was writing a Conan O'Brien comic book right now?
Right.
Just Conan O'Brien slaughtering picks with a broadsword. Anyway,
the coif tear would translate wonderfully,
It'd be amazing. Jason Aaron also wrote the book that like really launched him in a big way, in my mind, was a book called Scalped that is an enormously long story that is another crime story about an FBI agent who goes undercover on a Native American reservation where his uncle is like a crime boss. So it is like a Godfather-esque, big, huge, organized crime story told within the world of a Native American reservation, and it is brutal, and it's beautiful. R.M. Garab draws it, and it's a gorgeous book.
Is there a Fredo-esque tragic figure?
There are so many tragic figures in this story, but it is, and that's another book that has, it's complete. So it's a long story that finishes. So you will be able to like read it and finish it.
You know your audience. You know you're speaking to a lot of people who are still waiting for Winds of Winter. Yeah.
I'm going to do just a couple of more. Tom King and Mitch Garrods, who last year did Miracle Man, amazing, have just started a book called Strange Tales about Adam Strange. It's just starting to come out. I'm not sure how it will ship going forward. I'm assuming stuff will be available digitally, but I do not know. They are like top of the heap for me right now.
Yes.
Tom King also been writing Batman.
His vision was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. They also did a book together called Sheriff of Babylon that is collected in a trade that is fantastic. Strange Tales.
Former CIA agent.
Yes.
Tom King.
Tom King. Tom King, wow. Real deal. Yeah. Bringing a lot to it. Any Garth Ennis, Goran Parlov book. So there's a bunch of Punisher books they've done together. They did a Nick Fury book that's amazing together.
No.
Those are all like comics. And these are a couple of graphic novels that are like a lot more heart and a lot sweeter. So Tilly Walden, who I love, who did a book called Spinning a couple of years ago, that's a coming of age story for a girl in New Jersey who's figuring out her sexuality. She's a figure skater and her family abruptly moves to Texas and how that upends her whole world. And it's beautiful coming of age story. She has a new book called Are You Listening? That came out last year. That's gorgeous and worth tracking down. There's two Canadian guys, Chris Burton and Alex Forbes, who do a series of books that I'm obsessed with that are called the Hobtown Mysteries. And they are riffs on Nancy Drew Hardy Boys stories.
If
those stories existed in a David Lynch, Stephen King world.
Oh my God.
So the setup and the archetypes are very much like what you know to be. So each one of them is like, you know, The Cursed Hermit, you know, is the most recent one they put out. You know, the first one was The Case of the Missing Men. They have the architecture of those kind of Hardy Boys books, except what's happening is super dark and disturbing. And the teens that are trying to figure it out are way over their heads. And it's really unsettling stuff. They're great books. So the new book that just came out is called The Cursed Hermit. I talked about Tilly Walden. And then the last one I'll shout out is Darwin Cook's all of the adaptations of Richard Stark's Parker novels that Darwin Cook drew are like straight up caper, noir, crime stories that are done beautifully. And those are all worth tracking down. So that's a lot of stuff you can read for a long time. So boom, I did it.
Oh my God, this is great. The Binge Heads have a Jason Mantzoukas book club now.
It's
this is
beautiful.
Incredible. We'll put the whole list up on Twitter and you'll never see it. It'll be perfect.
I won't, but yeah, go ahead.
That's amazing. I'm curious, just like hearing you rattle off all those titles, what's your preferred consumption method for a comic? Like, do you like to get it one issue at a time? Do you like to wait for the compendiums? Do you read them digitally?
It depends. For the most part, I buy issues. For things that are put out in issues, I buy issues. Now, there are some creators who are slow. So if something like Batman or X-Men, something that's going to come out on schedule, I buy in issues. But there are certain people, because their scheduling is so infrequent, I will switch to trades, or I will get it in issues, but I'll wait until six pile up to read it. Because if I read an issue and the next issue doesn't come out for 3 months, I've forgotten what's happening now.
Right, losing your momentum.
I'm less likely to be invested in the book. So for the most part, I buy issues. This quarantine might be the thing that changes this. I've tried many times to switch to digital, but it's very hard. It's not intuitive for me. I want to hold the book and I want to read it and then bag and board it and put it in a box and file it away and blah, blah, blah. That's it. Like, for me, digital doesn't work. And plus, I'll give a shout out to my local comic shop, Secret Headquarters. Like, I like going to my comic shop every week. New comics come out on Wednesday. I like going and getting my comics and talking seeing Dave and Julie or whoever's working Malachi and saying hello, and also being like, is there, has anything new come out that I should be aware of? You know, and then being like, oh, you know what you would, oh, so perfect example. The Case of the Missing Men, this book that I just mentioned, is a book that when I went in, Julie, who works at Secret Headquarters, was like, hey, there's a book I think you would like. It's over there on the table. Grab it. And I was so obsessed with it. I then tried to develop it into a TV show with those guys that did it. But it was already doing a thing before me. But I was like, this is amazing. You know, so anyway.
That's so charming.
I like my places, you know, like I like going and buying records at Amoeba. I like going to Secret Headquarters. I like my little spots, you know.
Yeah, I've been reading on digital simply because of space issues. But it, there's something that's, first of all, screen format size is never, I can never find the right setting between like guided view or having both pages on the screen. There's something about opening a comic book and that like sensory overload of seeing all the panels just jump out at you and then having to be like, okay, I'm just going to go panel by panel. I'm not going to pay attention to that, even though I've just been hit with all this artwork right away. I just really miss that when reading in digital, although I have to.
Yeah, no, I want to see, you know, you can go panel by panel, but like I really, when I turn a page, I'm looking at the whole book. I'm looking at everything, even if I'm going, even if they're not in, you know, even if it's a 9-panel grid, you know, I'm still taking the whole into consideration. I don't want to go piece by piece, you know, it just doesn't work for me, but maybe it will come to, and it's just something I have to acclimate to. I just have not done it yet, to be truthful.
Interesting. I've been reading more comics for binge mode related purposes. When I was reading the Star Wars comics during binge mode Star Wars, I was using the Comixology app, and I found the guided view, like for me, is a little bit more of a comics novice. I found it really helpful, but I also think that it's the kind of thing that as I fall deeper into the comics world, I will grow to resent because I'm a control freak and I want to be able to have like the whole experience there in front of me and find my own way. So that's interesting to hear you both say that.
There's something about a really good splash page that it's beyond your reach on digital platforms. You just can't engage with a comic that way. There's just something about opening up a physical comic book and getting that great double splash page, beautiful layout where you're just like, look at this.
Especially if, as you kind of dig in, you notice, oh, the pages leading up to this have been building structurally to this 2-page spread. Mm-hmm. So 3 pages ago, it was 6 panels per page. Then it broadened out. Now it's been two big chunks. Now, you know, they're pacing you through the story. You know what I mean? Like a good artist is helping you through pacing through these panels. Like people would probably argue that there's a way to have both. And I'm just being a curmudgeon probably, but I should probably play with it more and explore more. But yeah.
That's interesting. What's your, while we're talking about comics, what's your favorite Marvel comic? What's your favorite Marvel character?
It depends, because for me, it depends on who's writing and drawing a character. So there's no character that I read always. Well, that's not true. Daredevil, I pretty much always read even when it's bad. So probably Daredevil. But I mean, my childhood love is Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Nick Spencer's Spider-Man right now is phenomenal.
So funny.
Has been since he started his run. His Kraven run was amazing. All of his stuff has been fantastic on Spider-Man right now. And his creator-owned books, The Fix and Morning Glories, his Superior Foes of Spider-Man is an amazing book to read as well that informs so much of the Spider-Man run he's doing right now. But Spider-Man is a perfect example of a book that I'm reading it now because I love Nick Spencer's writing. And I think Ryan Ottley's drawing it right now, who did Invincible, Kirkman's Invincible. Mm. And it feels like a big superhero. It's great. But a lot of times I don't like what they're doing with it, so I don't read it. You know, X-Men, I stopped reading years ago because I didn't like what they were doing with the characters. I didn't like the teams. So I'll fall off of a book. And then there are characters that, like, Doctor Strange is a character I don't care about. Mm. But then a couple of years ago, some people came on it and did a super interesting Doctor Strange story for 2 years that I read all of, you know? So right. I'll kind of come in and out on that stuff Marvel-wise. DC, I don't fuck with DC except for Batman.
Got it.
Same. Batman, a little Green Arrow, but that's it.
Yeah, I don't fuck with DC almost really at all. I'll fuck with DC if it's Batman or if it's an Elseworlds story that I don't need to know. I'll read Red Sun. I'll read All-Star Superman. I'll read right. Elseworlds stories that I don't need to know the canon of DC because it doesn't hit
That's
me right
thing.
And I don't know it. I just don't know it.
The DC canon is just so labyrinthine with so many yes. resets, and they've had to do so much surgery on that canon so many times. I'm the same way. I absolutely get lost in where yeah. I'm supposed to be and what are the references. Did this happen in this world?
Oh,
I don't
totally.
Even know what happened.
Which is why Batman works, because Batman pretty much is siloed out in right. his own world, essentially. There is a good Punisher. Garth Ennis is doing a great with, I'm forgetting the artist's name. I'm so sorry. There's a good Punisher Soviet book that's out right now that's all about the Punisher wow. going after all these people, but when every time he gets there, they're already dead. And he basically meets a guy who's the Russian equivalent of the Punisher, because the Punisher's backstory is Vietnam and this guy's backstory is Afghanistan for the Russians and that war. And so you're getting into that stuff. It's very political, very bloody and violent, and it's a great book.
Jason Burroughs?
Yes, thank you so much.
Got you, man.
Sorry, Jason Burroughs.
Anytime. Anytime. Should we quickly run through your gaming exploits since
yes.
you and Jason have been sharing video game tips?
This is very simple for me because I only play one game and it's Red Dead Redemption 2.
Have you played the story at all, or do you just ride around and look at stuff?
Well, I think I've played 30-something percent of the story,
okay.
at which point I decided I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to
right.
ride around, go fishing and hunting, and explore the world.
Yeah.
Which is now essentially all I do in the game is roam around. Like, it is almost like it's an outdoors surrogate. You know,
it really is.
I'm up at night being like, okay, I guess I'm going to go ride around in the mountains and see what that's, you know, and it's like, it tricks my quarantine brain into thinking like, I was outside for a while.
I mean, as long as you don't get attacked by O'Driscolls, I would assume you're fine.
Or a cougar. A fucking cougar jumped on my head and killed me the other day, and I had a bunch of perfect pelts on my back.
No,
I was
that's
like,
the worst.
Now
oh,
I'm
no.
stone cold fucked.
That's the worst.
I have not played Red Dead, but I have two like pretty potent memories associated with the game, both of which involve Jason and both of which involve a horse. The first is, of course, Jason losing, and I hate to bring this up, I don't want to upset
oh,
you, but
yeah,
when you lost, when you lost your horse, and you were
Betty.
Live streaming on Twitch, and you lost Betty, and you refused to believe that Betty had perished, and to watch you go through that in real time, it was honestly devastating and moving.
Well, the issue was that I had gotten off of her, and she was partially on a train, on the train tracks.
Oh,
that's
God.
Right.
And I went off and I was doing some things and having some hijinks. And then I come back and it's just the marker on the mini map where she's supposed to be. And she's deceased and there's all my stuff in a pile. And I was like, wait, what the fuck happened?
Can I ask a question? Do you think she just had enough of your shit?
I was good to her. I never overloaded her.
You think she was like, hey, man, I could use some more oat cakes. Here's your shit. I'm out of here, bro.
I'm spamming that pet button literally all the time. Every time we are riding, I'm spamming that button. There you go, girl. Good girl. You're a great girl. All the time, I'm brushing her. I am patting her. I am feeding her oat cakes. We're camping out. She gets tired. Let's camp out. Let's stop for a while. I treated her really well, and that it was a painful moment in my life.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was very painful.
It was honestly agonizing to witness. The other horse-related experience that I had was when I got Adam this game, because I knew it was a popular game, that people loved it, that it was supposed to be spectacular. He loves playing video games. Oh, great. I'll get this for him. What a cool wife. Mm. He was so so frustrated trying to figure out how to mount his horse. And Isaac, Jason, and I were on an editing call. I will not reveal publicly what time it was, but it was late.
It was late.
Adam was so mad. He was like throwing the remote controller. I can't play this game. I can't even fucking mount this horse. And I was just like, Isaac, I'm sorry. We need to interrupt this binge mode editing session so that I can put Jason on the phone with Adam and he can help him figure out how to mount this horse. Much like our tech delays here today, 45 minutes later, we resumed binge mode. And I don't think Adam has played much since, actually. Though the game, from my just viewing it, it looked spectacular.
I have had similar problems. For me, it is not intuitive how to interact in certain instances. So
this was his thing. Yeah.
So repeatedly, when I'm trying to mount my horse, I instead punch it. And the horse...
Oh, no!
And this also happens with people. Somebody, because in the game, you'll be walking through town and somebody will come up to you and be like, help me! Right. This thing just happened. Will you help me? And I go to say, yeah, what can I do to help? I instead punch that person. And then they're like, hey, I'm calling the cops. Next thing you know, the law is after me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was just trying to help. The buttons are not intuitive for me.
Oh, no. I thought you were going to say when you tried to mount people that you were using the game
it.
In a different kind of way.
Listen, if that's possible, the raciest this game gets is when you take a bath, they're like, do you want a woman to come in and scrub you? And I'm like, I guess maybe.
You're like, do you have Ahsoka booted up into the game code?
It's yeah, exactly. Please.
Oh, God.
Oh, speaking of, how do you guys feel about the casting Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano for Mandalorian season 2?
I love it. Let's go. I love it for no other reason than, selfishly, the Andy Greenwald connection, which I intend to exploit fully and absolutely to the hilt, could potentially give me and us access not only to Rosario and to the wonderful cast, but crucially,
Baby Yoda
puppet, yeah. Which I would like to see in person.
Me too. Oh, me too.
I'm putting it out there on Front Street.
Put it out into the universe. Yeah.
I think Baby Yoda could fix this coronavirus.
Listen, the power is there.
Force healing.
Yeah, you know? I'm very on board for it, and I can't wait. That second season of Mandalorian can't come soon enough.
Yeah, I do think it would have been cool if Ashley Eckstein, who has, of course, voiced the character for so many years, had gotten to portray the live-action version. But I think I'm just so excited that Ahsoka is finally coming to live-action Star Wars.
I mean, obviously,
we all have great affection for the animated properties, and it's no slight there. But seeing Ahsoka come into The Mandalorian, I also just think that the prospect of how all of those plot lines could then connect. You know, we know that the back half of season 7 of Clone Wars, much like part of Ahsoka's novel, is centered on the Siege of Mandalore. I think what information she can give to Mando and Baby Yoda, obviously her connection to Yoda, maybe she plays a role in getting Mando and Baby Yoda to the homeworld, and we'll finally learn more about the character, her connection to Mandalorian history, and now we know with Moff Gideon wielding Darksaber.
I mean,
of these things could connect. And then, of course, you know, well, you haven't... I was about to accidentally spoil the end of Rebels for you.
I listened to your podcast about Rebels, so I'm sure I know. I just have forgotten.
Yeah, but now it's different for you because you're in the flow of it. So I'll say no more. I'm just very excited for Ahsoka.
I'm very excited. I'm excited for that because I think she's great, and I have, like you guys, become obsessed with that character.
Well, listen, let's together, through the force of all three of us, lobby Andy.
Yeah.
We can all begin laying the groundwork now to pressure Andy to allow us to see Baby Yoda in the silicone flesh or whatever he is made of.
Yeah.
Has to happen.
It's all on Andy. And let's make sure that he understands if he doesn't, loses us as friends.
That's it. We're finished.
Like, there are stakes. There are stakes to this.
Yes. Unlike with Chewie's death, there are actual stakes here.
So the cast of Big Mouth recently had a live table read, which was streamed on YouTube, and it was associated with the charity FeedingAmerica.org. a great resource to provide food for those who are food insecure. How did that idea come about? And was it more difficult or less difficult in terms of tech than doing binge mode?
Yeah. So Big Mouth, you know, is an animated show that I do on Netflix. I do a voice on. And I think there was some talk once this started happening about, is there a way to do something just to raise money, to kind of do something that would be, you know, normally we would do like a show at a theater or something like that. But once the world shut down, we started having our normal Tuesday table. Normally on Tuesday morning, I go to a building in Los Angeles. We all sit around a table and we read that week's script. Mm-hmm. And it's super fun. They're always hilarious, raucous things. And once the quarantine hit, it became that, but on Zoom. And so I'll do one tomorrow morning. And it's just us reading the next upcoming script. And so once it was set up, that infrastructure, it's not that hard actually to put everybody on a screen and read a script. Everybody was like, well, why don't we just do that as a fundraiser for feedingamerica.org? And we did an episode from season 3 and got everybody to come in and read the episode and also just do bits with each other. And then there was like some Q&A and some people online had asked questions that we answered. And just mostly, which is what Big Mouth is watching a group of friends goof off together. And what's I think really fun for people, I hope was fun, is a lot of people only know those animated characters.
Right.
So to see all the voices, because none of us had, there was some consideration like, should everybody put their character up, like a still of their character or something like that. But it was like, no. What's fun is hearing and watching Nick do 6 different characters or watching, you know, each person in their box doing the voice that you know from the show. So it was really fun. Great response. We raised a shitload of money. The read is still up on YouTube, so you can go and watch it right now if you want. The charity, obviously, is still going. You can still go to feedingamerica.org and donate. They need it. So, you know, it continues to be a relevant source of enjoyment, but also a relevant way to help in what is obviously like a pretty dire time right now for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really awesome that you guys did that. You've been involved in a few of these different live stream experiences. Obviously, that one, you participated in the Comedy Gives Back Laugh Aid event. You were part of the Reply All Twitch game night. One of the things that's been so interesting about this moment in time is obviously it is, by definition, very isolating. But people are also discovering all of these new ways to connect. And I think that for a lot of people, maybe they find that they're actually working harder to reach out to people and see if they're okay. And I'm just curious, given all of the different, very unique experiences you've had with that, what it's been like to find all those different ways to kind of tap into community.
No, absolutely. It's such a weird, you know, not to peel the curtain back too much, but for me, you know, I'm single. I live alone. I don't have kids. I don't have a family. So like for me, very isolating.
Yeah,
it feels really lonely and very lonesome, you know, to be, for the most part, just in my house most of the day. The city is closed and on lockdown. So if I want, I can walk around my neighborhood, but that's about it. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Finding ways to connect, whether it's like we're doing right now on a Zoom call, you know, that'll come out later as a podcast or whatever, but I've been on everything from a bunch of like private, like I was saying earlier, a group of friends, we're reading a comic book and like a book club. We're reading a comic book. We're reading Planetary for next week. So we're going to read Planetary and then we're going to talk about it in a Zoom room. Or another group of friends, we're going to do a rewatch of Deadwood and we're going to do that.
Oh,
we're gonna,
hell yeah.
The best. And we're going to talk about that, you know, on a Zoom while we, because I normally have rosé and play cards with a group of my girlfriends on Sunday afternoons. Very classy.
Amazing.
Yeah.
A very classy ladies rosé and cards. So instead of playing cards, we now just get together on Zoom and chat and catch up. And so like there's a lot of that all the way up from socializing to using it like we did for Big Mouth as a way to raise money, or like Reply All's doing it as a way to just get a bunch of disparate people together to do something fun and silly that people can tune in and just watch, you know? Right. People can tune in and watch us just goof off and ostensibly play a game of Mafia, but really it's just an opportunity to like make fun of Alex or rip on Tommy Middleditch, you know, whatever. It's fun. For me, the things that I miss the most, somebody texted me and said, like, in this very kind of like, when all of this is over, where's the first place you're most excited to go?
Yeah.
The question being like, where in the world are you? And I was like, oh, to dinner with my friends. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's all I want. All I want is to be at dinner with my friends. Or for me, the other thing is that I miss so much. I miss doing shows. I'm a live performer. I perform in Los Angeles when I'm here 2-3 nights a week. I'm doing shows. You know, Jason came and saw me do a show a couple of months ago or a month or so ago. I love and miss now performing. So like there's a Zoom that's just a bunch of other comedy people that, you know, it's an open couple of hours and people just drop in and do bits and catch up and are funny. And that scratches that itch a little. But, you know, I miss performing. I miss like the social elements that this has taken away. You know, it's lonesome, you know, absolutely.
I could not agree more. And listen, there's people going through crazy stuff. My brother is a nurse. He's dealing with this on a daily basis in a way that is just like mind blowing to actually hear about. It's like he can't even, he's got a 2-year-old kid, so he can't even go home. Like they've had to split up the family where like his wife and kid have been staying with my mom and then he's staying at the house and it's this whole thing.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I want to say like, and I'm coming from all of the privilege in this regard.
Same thing. Like, but it's absolutely valid to be like, man, I miss just hanging out with my friends. The same thing. Sure. You know, like I've been spending the last 10, 12 months, like going just to a lot of shows. I'd love to see shows and laugh a lot. Going to UCB, going to my friends' comedy shows, hanging out afterwards, talking to people. And that kind of disconnection from that, you don't really understand how much you enjoyed it. And we're nourished by it until it's taken away from you and you can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel very lucky that for me, the greatest struggle I'm going through is psychological. You know, like in every other way, I'm okay, but it's terrifying. It's unprecedentedly terrifying.
It really is.
What's happening, and what's most heartbreaking to me is that unlike something catastrophic happening to us, like the threat is other people.
Right.
Yeah.
We are a threat to each other. It's not like a natural disaster or something like that, that we all, this is like, oh, it's such like, to see a neighbor and feel like compelled to go away from them is so sad, because it's like we are in this together, but I'm scared of you now. You know, like that is heartbreaking and only makes you feel more isolated and more alone in it, because you can't even rally around and amongst your people to be like comforted or soothed by just intimacy. Or the collective suffering that we're all in together, which we are. It's been very, very sad and very scary.
Yeah. You know, even when we were just talking a couple of weeks ago about getting the podcast going again, we were struggling with that aspect of it, you know, how sort of strange and weird it would feel to be laughing together for a couple hours when you, anytime you look at your phone, you have 50 push notifications about some new horror. And I find that while I keep sort of feeling compelled to issue these caveats of, you know, I know how fortunate we all are. And I am truly like in awe of the people who are in essential fields who still have to go out into the world, healthcare workers. I mean, people working for Instacart, you know, you could name all of these different things, people who are out there literally helping people stay alive. And it is impossible to equate something like a story to that. But it's also one of those things where I think the thing that we all miss so much is, like you're saying, just that sense of togetherness. And there are all sorts of different things every day that you realize like you just took for granted before.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like spend some time reflecting on that and thinking about that. And like, I don't know, just little things. Like I just am talking to my family a lot more than I was before. You know, the last couple of weeks I've done Zoom calls with my college roommates who like I love and adore, but had not literally done that with ever in the decade since we graduated college, decade plus. So
I'm getting in touch with all of my ex-girlfriends and begging them to take me back. Like, what about now? Question mark.
What about now?
What about now?
How are you holding up? Text. Send.
Yeah.
I have Alexa. That's pretty much it. I masturbate to her.
Of course.
Only because you don't have the cum queso yet, though. Once you get that.
Yeah.
You won't need anything else.
And make sure you don't throw that cum away. We have to save all of our cum.
I've been saving it. I've been wrapping it up. I have the dates and the times on there.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have it filed away in a long box. That's most of the back room here.
Smart.
Can we pivot quickly from ejaculate to toilet paper? Though obviously occasionally they're related. I'm wondering if Adrian Pimento, your character on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes.
Predicted the toilet paper crisis with the buy toilet paper tattoo in February's Pimento Memento Finding Dory episode.
Correct. Yes. And that was specifically about... Yes. I predicted that we would all need toilet paper in bulk because they were going to put it on very small. And I said, make that font bigger. People need to know.
What was your like CrossFit routine to get ready for all of your nude
scenes in
that?
Oh, man. I wish I'd gotten in better shape.
You looked great.
Andy Samberg took a picture of me because I'm wearing nothing but a little modesty belt, like a tiny little thing that just covers my dick.
How tiny was it?
It's so small. It's so small. It's, you know, they have to give me the one that is normally used for a baby. Anyway, he took a picture of me because I wanted a picture with all of the tattoos on, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So he took a picture of me and I was like, oh, I wish I'd gotten in just a little bit better shape because this is not a great look with just the modesty belt on. But yes, that whole thing, the tattoos, all of it. Yeah. A lot of people have pointed out that, yes, that was very prescient. The need for toilet paper. But listen, Pimento knows everything, guys. He's probably from the future. That's next year's Pimento episode. It's a 12 Monkeys.
I won't be surprised if the Pimento and Derek universes combine at some point. Like, what would Derek be doing right now? What would Infinite Derek be thinking right now?
Oh, he would probably... Well, I mean, like, there is no now. For the
Jeremy Baramee.
Yeah, right. there is no now for that enlightened Derek,
That's
you know?
Right.
I will say I was doing a comedy festival in Colorado in February, and like a 13-year-old girl nervously came up to my table with a martini glass full of olives and gave it to me. And just about broke my heart. It was so cute and very adorable. It's so interesting. Both Brooklyn and The Good Place have such key young people audiences that this is the first time that like young kids are like, oh my God, like can't believe they're seeing me in the real world.
Really?
For like a 12-year-old kid to see me like in a restaurant in Colorado who just sees me as Derek. Like it was wild, you know, really crazy and weird.
That's awesome.
How are you feeling now that The Good Place has finished its run? How do you feel about it? Really a special show with a special place in
our
hearts.
What an amazing show. I loved the show. I mean, I watched from episode one, watched it all through season one. The twist, I'll be honest, I was annoyed that I didn't see it.
Sure, yeah.
I was like, how dare you? And I emailed Mike Schur and I was like, wow, it is so exciting to be surprised by something. I have not felt like this in a long time. A full on 10 episodes in rug pull. Wow. I saw none of this coming. It was great. And to then be invited into it when there started to be like a little bit of a, hey, there might be a thing. Hey, there's this, we're talking in the room about this something that you're the only person maybe that we're talking about doing it. And I was like, well, okay. But that happens a lot. You know, you'll hear about something and then it'll go away, you know, because ultimately they'll be like, it doesn't bear out, you know, kind of what we were trying to do. But then, no, it was. And it was this wild kind of half-baked, because initially Derek is like, the way they did the dialogue initially was they would write lines, Google translate them into multiple other languages and
oh
then
my God.
Retranslate them back into English. And those would be my lines.
That's incredible.
And then it just got weirder and weirder. And Derek keeps evolving and with the reboots and all that stuff. For me, I was already such a fan of the show from watching it all of season one that to then go inside of it was crazy. You know, it was really, really fun. I mean, an amazing cast, both of performers, like I love them on the show, but then just it was one of those jobs that they all loved each other. Everybody was super supportive. Everybody was because, you know, when there's an ensemble that is big, like Brooklyn or like this or Parks in the past, all of the Mike Schur shows, but other ones too. It's not always a great position to be the guest star and be like, hey, this week's A story is all about me. You know, I'm not even on your show.
Yeah.
And for some reason I get to be the, you know, that can be a tough position to kind of walk into. And they were the best and so welcoming and so supportive. And then again, I got to just be a fan of the show.
Right.
And watch them build this unbelievable narrative around these incredibly silly, goofy characters that are in the throes of exploring, you know, moral philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, the juxtaposition is from slapstick dum-dum humor to deep, like what it is to be good. And what, I mean, right now we're dealing with so much of what is it to be a good person? What is it?
Yes.
How do we ethically and morally navigate the times we're in right now? How prescient of that show to be dealing with so much of that?
I, you know, obviously the season one finale and the twist is still the most iconic part of the show. But I find that I think about the season two finale the most for that reason. And specifically the scene with Eleanor and Michael at the bar back on Earth. And the way that Ted Danson delivers that line, the real question, Eleanor, is what do we owe to each other?
Yeah.
I like get chills every time I think about that still. And how not only how germane it is now, I mean, of course, when you're having this shared experience right now where you, every individual person has, you know, the crisis might take a different form for each person, but there's something existential about it, I think, for almost all of us.
Oh, yeah.
And you find yourself thinking back to all of these like lessons that you've absorbed over the course of your life. And it is actually like an incredible, miraculous thing that The Good Place is one of the things you find yourself thinking about in a moment like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and it would make, for people who haven't maybe seen it, it's a great watch. Watch The Good Place right now.
Yes.
It is both very funny and it's very good.
Poignant. It's lovely. Speaking of The Good Place, what are you most likely during this extended period of time at home of like a full length show to dive back into and return to if you've seen it already?
Okay. So last year I rewatched the first four seasons of West Wing, the Sorkin seasons of West Wing. I will rewatch Deadwood right now because some friends of mine and I are doing it. I'm considering rewatching Sopranos because I've never done a full rewatch of it ever. Mm. I only watched it as it aired and then have watched certain episodes here and there.
Right.
Here's a show that I am embarrassed, not embarrassed, because everybody's got a list of, you know what, I never saw, is this show that I know I should watch because it would be perfect to watch now. Breaking Bad.
Oh, my God. You have to watch it.
So I think I'm going to watch Breaking Bad and then Better Call Saul.
Oh, that's my a God. Ride.
Yeah.
Oh, that my is God. Ride. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
obviously.
Of course. I've not watched it for no good reason. I just didn't do it.
Now, it's not the mood lifter you're looking for.
I
based
know.
On your earlier comments about wanting a laugh right now. Though it is, I mean, it is amusing in the sense that it is just unbelievably clever and sharp-witted. Yeah. It's phenomenal. I've been craving a Breaking Bad rewatch, too. I've fallen behind on Saul, and I feel like Saul has now arrived at that moment where it's the show every week that people are like, oh my God, if you're not watching Saul, you're
right.
Doing something wrong. So I really feel like I need to catch up on Saul, but I kind of want to rewatch Breaking Bad in order to do that. The one I've been really feeling the itch for lately is Battlestar Galactica. I really want to rewatch that. Really, really, really want to rewatch it.
I enjoyed that. Battlestar Galactica was always inconsistent for me.
Yeah.
Some of it I loved and some of it I just did not. Wait, where are you on should I watch Outlander?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Because that's Ronald Moore as well, right?
Yeah. So I'm behind by quite a bit. I think like a season and a half.
Okay.
Though I intend to catch up. I really enjoyed it. It is super, super unique. Unapologetically itself in ways both good and bad, but I really admire that in a show. Like, it just is like, this is what we're doing. You know, this is the identity of the show and we will not veer away from that.
Sure, sure.
Listen, this is binge mode. Some of the most unbelievable sex scenes that you're going to see on a television show.
Right.
In what way?
Well, like, just one example, one that happened to come to mind. Jamie, the unbelievably beautiful person, receives his first blowjob from Claire. And it's like an 11-minute scene.
And what timeline? Now, what timeline is this? This is in the past.
Well, the premise of the show is that Claire goes into the past.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And so she's, right, okay.
And the show is, as I understand it, and forgive me if I'm misinterpreting this, is she is from the present, but she's bringing blowjobs to the past.
Right. So this is, she has brought blowjob technology to 1700s.
So she's going to different time periods to introduce blowjobs to those people.
That's right. She's brought modern technique with her into the past.
Is this like a Terminator thing where if you bring blowjob technology to the 1700s, it so changes the course of history that then the world collapses because of the paradox created by the advanced blowjob technology of the 21st century?
She's like, imagine grasping it with two hands, like the way you grasp your sword.
Right, exactly. Think of your long sword. Oh my God.
This is like a series that would be on Pornhub. Yeah. That's like sexy Quantum Leap.
Yes! Yeah, that is what it is.
Is Outlander sexy Quantum Leap? I'm in.
Kind of. It can be very violent. There's a lot of war.
Dean Stockwell is also in it.
Very quiet, very gentle, including in the lovemaking scenes. I really can't recommend it highly enough. A lot of kilts.
Okay.
Oh, also, Jason, your guy, Tobias Menzies.
Love him.
Plays a key role. Our dear Brutus from Rome.
Love him.
Who is also...
Edmure Tully from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He plays Blackjack Randall and another character as well, though I won't get too lost in the weeds here with the details of how that could be possible.
We got on this because you were saying you're going to do Battlestar, and that's interesting.
I'm not sure I'm actually going to just because of the time commitment, but I really want to. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I haven't seen it in years. I basically always want to rewatch one of the following. The Wire, Sopranos, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Battlestar, Lost, or Friday Night Lights. Obviously, or Game of Thrones. Yep. At any given moment in my life, I'm craving a rewatch of one of those. And I have just been trying really hard lately because I've felt like I've fallen really behind on a lot of culture in the last couple of years, which will happen if you spend almost all of your time either doing your actual job or watching Game of Thrones and reading Harry Potter and watching Star Wars. So I'm trying to consume new things.
You don't want to be trapped in nostalgia, even though it feels good.
Well, that's one of the eternal dilemmas, because like there are moments in my life, I wonder if you guys feel this way, where like I feel a little bit guilty if I'm returning to something for the umpteenth time, because,
100%.
You know, like even in my own home, let alone out there in the world, or the comic book shops you're mentioning, bookstores, like so many books that I have yet to read, that I have so many shows that I want to watch, films I want to get to. And I feel bad when I don't do that, but also like, very few things in life bring me more joy than returning to Harry Potter. And like, I don't really feel bad about that. It makes me happy. I always find something new when I'm there. And it's a way to connect to some of the most important moments and people and things in my life.
To that point, I find, and this is one of the areas we've not spoken about, I find so much comfort in this time, which is so, like we were saying, isolated and apart from things that you want to be comforted either by familiar stories or whatever. I'm finding it impossible, for example, to like read a book or like read a novel or
it's really hard.
I'm finding it impossible to get lost in something, really, because I'm so easily bumped out of it by remembering the circumstances we're in, right?
Right.
So long form things are hard for me to get into, or dense things are hard for me to read. So comic books make more sense. And I'm finding that I'm taking great comfort in podcasts, taking great comfort in listening, especially shows that I love, like Binge Mode or The Watch or Doughboys or all these podcasts where the thing that I like about the show is the people talking to each other.
Mm.
Right.
I enjoy listening to you two talk. I like the content
Thank
of Binge
you, Jason.
Mode.
So
I like
nice.
The content of Binge Mode. You happen to also align, like, but here's the thing. Like, if you guys were like, great, Binge Mode from now on, all we're talking about is sports. I would probably try to listen because I love you both and your dynamic, but it would be hard for me because the content would be not interesting. It totally aligns, right? Like, I love a podcast called Doughboys. That's an amazingly hilarious podcast. Mm-hmm. Nick Weiger, Mike Mitchell. They ostensibly, every episode, they are reviewing a chain restaurant, a McDonald's, a Fridays, a whatever, you know, some chain restaurant. But that is the facade of a show where is what you're really tuning in for is the ups and downs of the relationship between Mitch and Nick, who at various times are always dear friends, but seem to be driving each other into madness. And so you're listening to a show where they're going crazy and it's amazing and it's hilarious to listen to. So I like listening to it because I love those guys. Like, it's not like, oh, I get to listen to my friends. I listen to Binge Mode before I ever met you guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about that friendship. It's about, like, the same way that I listen to the Howard Stern show religiously, you know, because those are characters and people that I want to keep listening to the conversations. So that to me is what helps me feel connected, is to continue to hear the voices and the points of view of the people that I love listening to, that I love listening, whether it's about a topic that I care about or not, frankly, you know, I don't care about which burger chain makes the best fries, but I care so much about listening to the guys talk about it, you know? So I think that's such a big part of getting through what is very isolating, weird times is still feeling like I'm part of conversations that I am not. I think that's how people feel about How Did This Get Made as well. You know, like that while they're doing their routines, like they're listening to us talk about whatever movie we're talking about or whatever, you know?
So speaking of, before we get into our fourth hour, what's next for How Did This Get Made? When could people expect to hear you guys talk about next? Are you going to do Cats like Seth Rogen requested in his 80-tweet Twitter thread the
yes,
other week?
We are going to do Cats. I can confirm that. We are
amazing.
So, we are, we've been waiting for it to come to streaming so that people could watch it.
Yeah.
That's kind of been the holdup. And then this all started happening. So we continue to release episodes because we still have a backlog of episodes that have not been released yet. So those will continue to be released. Some new episodes are coming out from behind our paywall so that people will have access to more free episodes, I guess. I'm not super up on all of this. And then we're going to start doing something similar to what we are doing currently now. We'll be doing new episodes much like this. You know, we'll be, I'm assuming, recording them on some sort of shared platform and then it'll be pushed out. Truth be told, I don't know the mechanics of it yet. But I think all podcasts will be able to be done similar to what we're doing now. And the setup I'm currently using is the one that I was given to put together to start doing active podcasts. So I think soon enough, we will be up and running. I don't know exactly when and how it will work, but our goal is to be uninterrupted, continuing to put out a new episode every week.
Good. People need you in their lives. You bring so much joy to all of us.
That is
thanks.
Absolutely the case.
And selfishly, I want to do it. Selfishly, like, I want to talk to Paul and June. I want to talk.
Yeah,
I want to, like, get into it. I want to, just like we're talking now, I'm like, selfishly for me, this makes me feel good to be, like, engaged and passionate and fired up. And I want to tell you about this. And I made a list of all the stuff I wanted to talk about. And, you know, that's,
you're the
I
best.
Want that connection. And I want, not only do I want it selfishly for myself, I selfishly want that as a listener to other podcasts. I want to listen. I still want to listen to other people be fired up about stuff and be engaged and not just be feeling as though we cannot have conversations like this because the situation is so dire. Make no mistake, the situation is very dire out there. Things are brutal right now. But I also think there are so many people that will listen to these hours of content we're doing, that will listen to all this other stuff, and their mood will be lightened from it. For that time, they will be either mad at me for suggesting something or happy that I suggested something or whatever, and be distracted and be like, ah, wasn't that nice to get away from my own thoughts for a while and disagree or agree with the binge mode folks about whether or not X, Y, or Z is worth reading, watching, or listening to.
About whether or not Claire's advanced blowjob technique should have created an offshoot timeline that would have then caused our reality to collapse.
Well, it's like Flashpoint, but, Dick Point. That's the text they're working off.
So is she trying to introduce blowjobs into every sliver of the multiverse?
Yeah, it's Crisis on Infinite Earths, except it's all about not being able to replicate the experience of a Claire blowjob. That's the whole premise. Now you're caught up. You don't need to watch. Well, this has been a true delight. Thank you so much for doing this with us. It was so fun. We're always here, man. We're always here if you want to hop on the line.
Literally, guys, anytime. I will come on and do this. There's stuff I didn't even talk about. We didn't talk about podcasts or records or
anything else you want to run through?
I mean, we could talk about it another time. Although I will say, just for fun, again, I want to point out, I'm going to just point out a couple of things. The Porridge Radio record, Every Bad, is unreal. Phoebe Bridgers put out a beautiful new song called Garden Song that is heartbreaking and reduces me to tears every time. Katie Crutchfield put out a new Waxahachie record called St. Cloud that's beautiful.
Yes.
Nils Fromm put out a beautiful new record called Empty, if you need quiet music at night to do a jigsaw puzzle to. I can't recommend enough that people do jigsaw puzzles.
Oh my God. Yeah. We had a question about puzzles on our question list for you, and then we didn't get to it. Have you been doing puzzles?
I am a very outspoken jigsaw puzzle person and have been for years. I do these very large, very difficult.
How many pieces are we talking?
They're like 1,000 or a little over 1,000 pieces, but they are like really difficultly cut wooden quarter of an inch thick puzzles. They're beautiful. Anyway, but do any kind of puzzles. Puzzles are a great way to kind of like put just the right amount of attention on an activity. And then in the background, put on binge mode. Or I've been listening to like people's stand-up specials, because you don't need to watch a stand-up special every second. You can kind of tune in and out. And it's perfect to just be doing the puzzle and listening to, like, Ronnie Chang just put out an amazing special on Netflix. Ian Edwards has a great special that came out on Comedy Central. There's great comedy specials out there. Seek that out while you're organizing your books or organizing your whatever you do. Like, there's so many nice things that are, to me, jigsaw puzzles are almost meditative. Mm-hmm. It really is. It occupies just the right amount of attention that I can then kind of let my mind wander and focus on other things, which is lovely.
Yeah. They're very cathartic. I've been craving a lot of Lego activity lately for similar reasons. And actually, to connect this to an earlier topic, I did see that there is a Lego set of The Ghost for Rebels.
Oh, interesting.
There is. Which, I definitely need to procure.
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, I don't mind that. Oh, guys, we could keep doing this for hours.
This has been fantastic. Thank you for coming on. This really is a highlight. It's wonderful. Oh,
so much fun for us.
I can't thank you guys. This has been the best conversation I've had in weeks because we got to talk about so many of the things that I love. And I mean it. And I know I say this all the time, but I love the show. I love you both. And it makes me absolutely so happy when a new episode shows up in my feed, because I know that I'm going to get to spend some time with the two of you. And I'm mostly going to get to hear you both making each other laugh and surprising each other and sharing in the discoveries of these things that we all love to talk about together. So thank you for doing it. And thank you for letting me be a part of it. Like, nothing
thank
makes
you
me
so
happy.
Much, oh my Jason. God.
You're wow. So nice. We said this to you last time we did this with you, but we both like honestly can't get over the fact that you give a shit about who we are and talk to us.
Yes.
It's incredible for us. It's really the delight of our lives. So thank
happily,
you.
Happily. But I do want to put this on the record. Fuck you, Isaac.
What?
Fuck you.
Why? For what reason?
No, I'm just kidding. Thank you,
you know
Isaac.
What oh you God. Did.
Yeah, you're going to edit out all of the cum queso jokes and put in stuff
oh
about the like, Los Angeles Clippers and basketball. That's why.
Put in double the amount of fuck you Chris Ryans.
Well, goes without saying, obviously. Well, friends, good Bob. We hope we same place again very now. Just as we keep telling Isaac Lee and Zach Cram, our indispensable producer and researcher. We hope that you enjoyed this week's two-part interview with our dear pal, Jason Mantzoukas. We hope it made you smile. And of course, we hope that you're staying healthy, staying safe. Social distance, wash your hands. If you're out there performing essential services, as always, we thank you sincerely. And if you're able to stay home, we thank you for that as well. We will be back with you next week to chat about Saga. Use the intervening days to read the comics if you haven't. Read them again if you have. Until then, remember, we're so in sync, we're finishing each other's.
Derek!
The vials of cum also play a key role.
Jars
in...
of now it's jars of cum. Sorry.
Well, vials, though, in Watchmen. This was also a key plot point in Watchmen. Don't forget. This is a versatile plot point.
This is going to be the world we're living in, guys. This is the world. This is the future.
Jars.
Guys, yeah. You can't use any of this.
Wait, does this not go out live? Is this going to be edited?
Yes, heavily so.
How dare you, Isaac?
Yeah, just remember, blame Isaac for all the cuts, not us.